RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time for another Tech Tuesday here at RCR. Stephen Sykes is back with us. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
Not too bad. I'm always curious what sort of feedback we've had to Tech Tuesday every time we talk. So maybe we'll start with that. We'll get into some of the tech stories and then we'll get on to, well, no more women in tech for now. That was great, by the way. I think we're into hacking. Well, you'll find out as we get closer to that. All right, feedback. Who's been getting in touch, Stephen?
So Tony writes in to say that my friends and I have been woking up at around 3 a.m. by
woking?
Some stranger.
Woking or waking?
Sorry.
Woking.
Slip of the tongue, sorry.
We don't want them woking.
No, we don't want them woking.
Sorry.
They have woken up at 3 a.m. by some strange sound or vibrations or electronic surge through the ear. That in my case, the tinnitus sound levels go from the normal 2 out of 10 to 7 out of 10. My sensitive RF meter does not detect any readings. So what can be causing this disturbance? My other friend turns off the power at the mains to enable a good night's sleep. So is it the devilishly smart meters having a heated conversation with each other at this early hour? Many realize that we live in an increasing sea of thick electronic soup that humanity has trouble with its taste and effects. So can you throw any light on this troubling occurrence? Many thanks if you can.
Oh,
well,
okay.
Turns out this is a thing.
It is a thing.
It is a thing. So actually some other feedback that came into RCR was a video by which many people in the USA, at least, have been reporting this as of a few years ago. So perhaps there's a correlation with the increasing deployment of 5G towers around the country here, because USA had it first and they've been reporting it years beforehand. So it's, and everyone's saying it's around 3 a.m.
That's interesting. What, no matter where the time zone is, it's kind of a middle of the night thing.
Yes, the middle of the night thing. Yeah.
Okay, here we go. I'm not making it about me, but one thing I've noticed every now and then, and I don't think it's tinnitus, because I've been exposed to audio all this time, never had a problem, and I'm not having any ringing in my ears at the moment as we're talking. But every now and then you get this sort of high-pitched, it sounds like Morse code to me. It's really low level, but it just beep, 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 and doesn't last for long. But every now and then I notice it. And I've wondered if that is, EMF disturbance. I wonder.
I wonder too. But, it's a thing. And you're not alone. A lot of people are reporting that.
And if you say it, you kind of sound, oh, yeah, he's, woo-woo. But, no, it's noticeable.
Yes. And, of course, everyone's indifferent until it happens to them.
And did you catch up with the story about the mystery pings coming from the spaceship, the Boeing Starliner spaceship, the weird sonar? I was watching that the other day, and they didn't seem to be able to figure out where it was coming from in the ship.
Oh, that's a bit concerning.
It's like, Dave.
Sorry, right? Dave. Yeah. Hell.
Going to have to turn the power off, Dave. Anyway, just saying. All right, so there's that. Who else?
So long-term listener Dave has been having a bit of fun with search engines, and he compared a search that he did with Google search and DuckDuckGo, and he types in the phrase bioweapon, gain of function, Gates Foundation, and Fauci. And Google gave him the results saying, it looks like there weren't any great matches for your search.
Oh, however, come on.
However, doing it in DuckDuckGo, he got truckloads of results. I suspect that there might be something interesting with the formatting of how those terms were put into Google search, because Dave puts in a whole lot of quote marks to make sure to tell Google search to search for these exact phrases.
Yep.
And then you put the plus in to make sure it's all connected up. So if I remove all of those in a Google search, I do get results. They're not as colorful as what DuckDuckGo comes up with, But I can still obtain results along the same lines as what DuckDuckGo comes back with.
So, in Google, yeah.
In Google. But so I'm wondering, so Dave, maybe they're onto you. I don't know.
Maybe they know it's you, Dave, and they don't want you to know. It sounds like too much formatting, over-formatting.
It could be, but Dave concludes with a very excellent point. And he says, and I'll quote, "People, we are being manipulated and our opinions are being controlled through every screen in our country. Our children are forming Google attitudes that they will have for life unless they have great courage and are prepared to exercise that courage. I have totally removed Google from my life and feel much better for it."
Okay. Good luck with that, Dave, with the children, that is.
Well, I've done a de-Googled phone or two for him as well, so he really has de-Googled.
Oh, well, the real deal, eh? Okay, deal. Anyone else that we've heard from before we get into the newsy stuff?
Yeah, so Jane writes that apparently they're closing down the 3G network, so if you refuse the upgrade, you'll have no Wi-Fi as far as I know. Well, yes, they are closing down 3G March next year, but if you are using Wi-Fi at home or your work or anything, that's a completely separate thing.
Right.
On smart meters, it's just used for the smart meters form of communication, not what you might be doing with your phone, tablet, or laptop, etc. And the final one was actually came in through the other week, but didn't quite have time to talk about it. Sorry. So a long time ago, we talked about decentralized forms of communication and social networks and things like that. So a lot of people, I suspect, will be following the Health Ranger, who's Mike Adams. He's been in a whole lot of health documentaries and done a whole lot
I've
of
watched him.
Yep.
Yep.
Really a lot interesting of podcasts guy. Himself. Mm. So he runs the Brighteon network, which is a decentralized system, so that if certain components of the internet are removed, then Brighteon will continue to function. And because it's decentralized and distributed, if certain sites get taken offline, then it'll still work. If DNS is tweaked, DNS is domain name system. So when you, in your web browser, you type in the name of a website, because humans think in terms of words and computers think in numbers, that website address you've typed in and the background gets converted to an IP address and then you go off to your website. But if you can manipulate DNS, you can effectively take an entire site offline, or you can potentially fudge a site. So if you were able to do this, say, for a bank, let's just for argument's sake, say Westpac, and you were able to mock up a banking website that looked just like websites, Westpac site, but it wasn't in the background, it was stealing all your data when you logged into it, then that would be a very elaborate DNS attack. So DNS is very fundamental to how the internet works. Okay. But the Brighteon network will get around that because the software that you can install on your computer will, it knows where to find all the servers. So without DNS operating, so long as you've got functioning internet, you're good.
Have there been a few scams going to that level of detail where, you know, I suppose there have been, where you essentially reproduce what looks like the real website of the entity, direct them to it, and then people start tapping in like they normally do without even realizing?
Oh, yeah. Typically in phishing scams, so you get an email that looks like it came from a bank, and you go and click on the link and it takes you to a website that looks just like a bank website, and the URL is just often one letter different.
Yeah. Always look for the URL, right?
Yeah, and it's a very subtle change, and if you're not paying attention, then you can end up being misdirected.
And having no money. Yeah.
Yep.
And then having to try and beg for it back from someone. All right. Is that it? Is that the feedback?
That's feedback for today.
All right. I want to get on to some news. What's the story? Facebook partner listening into phones? Who's the Facebook partner doing that?
So this is the Cox Media Group, and they have claimed in a slide deck that their active listening software uses AI to collect and analyze real-time intent data by listening to what you say through your phone, laptop, or your home assistant, like Alexa and the things like that. So they say in their slideshow deck that they tout Facebook, Google, and Amazon as clients. However, all of them deny such an association. But their slide deck, where they say it uses predictive audience technology, that the first point is, one, consumers leave a data trail based on their conversations and online behavior. Two, AI collects and analyzes this behavior and voice data from 470 plus sources. Three, processing voice data with behavioral data identifies an audience who is quote unquote ready to buy. Four, we take this data and align it with your products and services to build an audience list in a defined 10-mile radius, and so on and so on. But of course, the other companies deny such an association, but people have known for a very, very long time that their phones have been listening on them, because, you know, you talk about something with somebody else in the lounge, and then next minute you see an ad for the very topic you were talking about.
Yeah, it's no miracle.
It's no miracle, no.
Yeah. So this thing listens in and sort of triangulates a whole lot of things, like what you've been talking about, maybe what you've been searching for or looking at. And what even
just talking about.
Yeah, but then that comes down to, because I think you used the word intent. That comes down to nuances of how you even say a word. I mean, you can say you're going to buy something in a sarcastic way, which means I'm not going to buy it. Or you can say I'm going to buy that, or yeah, I'm going to buy that. Yeah, right. You know, so there's quite a bit to it.
There is. Like, you remember the old phrase, oh, I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yeah, that's right. Where did that come from? Was that off RoboCop?
Yes. Well, that's where I first heard about it. So that was 1987.
I'll buy that for a dollar. Yeah, it was a game show, wasn't it?
Some crappy cheap show, something like that.
And they kept on promoting the same car too. You know, there was this epic car model that, and we'll talk about cars in just a moment. Facial recognition to pay... what?
Well, to buy anything.
To pay. Not to make you pay, but when you pay, instead of what? PIN numbers or whatever? Face.
Yeah, so you just like turn up to a shop naked and then wave your face in front of a camera and there's your purchase right there. So the Chinese have been doing it for quite a long time, but hey, China is one of the most surveilled countries on the planet. So this was first reported to me just a few days ago in Australia, and now it's made even MSN.
You mean the mainstream media is talking about it already?
Well, I like to affectionately call them legacy.
Legacy. Yep.
Yeah, legacy informs deprecation, implies deprecation. So people appear to be less worried about privacy and are more worried about whether or not it just simply works. So if it doesn't scan your face properly, you're going to be there in front of a camera doing weird things with your face and trying to get it to recognize who you are. You know,
you've got to look your best for the facial recognition. I'm going to be looking my best. Right?
Well, what if you do look your best, and because of the information it's got about your face, you look better than you did in the photograph or whatever it was that the system was trained upon, and you look so good now, you don't look anything like how
you're not like disheveled hangover in one Saturday morning when the last image was taken.
Yeah.
It's like we don't recognize you.
There's a plethora of concerning things about this that, you know, when did I say this? I know I've said it somewhere recently. Like since the iPhone 10 or something, they do facial recognition with IR sensors that's blasting your face every 5 seconds with about 10,000 dots. What does that do for your health? So people have sort of gotten used to it a little bit, and people use it to unlock their phones. I don't, because I don't have an iPhone. But I can see somebody using this to make people pay for online purchases in the same way that your credit card numbers get pinched and you get
Pinches your face.
Well, that's the thing. You can do it from a distance, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to be up close. So your face becomes the form of your face becomes the form of payment. And most people go out there in public wearing their face. It's not like you can put that in your pocket, in your wallet, like you can with even a card or your cash. So you're waving your form of payment around all the time.
I wonder if there's other parts of the body that could be recognized in the same way a face could be, that are more private, that you're not displaying in public. That I don't know if we want to go here.
I was just going to say that.
It's like, that's not you. Yeah. All right. That sounds like it's open to all sorts of things.
It sounds like an accident waiting to happen in a bad way.
Yeah, train wreck. Petrol cars and road user charges. It was only a matter of time, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. And this got reported, late last month. And I decided to talk about it this time because we were short on time last
week.
Wait
on, didn't you mention something about that in The Cage, your epic The Cage?
I did, because it's not the road user charges themselves that concerns me. It is, as always, the implementation. So people, I've seen attitudes where they go, oh, it's about time the paper version of road user charges disappeared. And we have digital devices based upon GPS that can do the mileage because it'll be more accurate than your odometer, and people can't be bothered and they want the convenience. Well, okay. So that device potentially knows everywhere you've been, and depending on the hardware and the software that's running inside the thing, what's it actually doing?
Yeah.
Who's it talking to?
Yeah. The first thought is, oh, the convenience.
Yeah.
And then for many, it just stops there. Think about what it means and where the data goes.
Yes.
And if you're talking AI, especially government AI, the ability to share between government departments and entities is going to be seamless. So you can shift all that around from anywhere to anywhere.
And do it in real time.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. This is some sort of a... Have petrol cars... We've always paid road user, but it's been through registrations and things like that. Am I right?
Well, there's you pay at the pump.
Oh, at the pump, yeah, okay.
So the more you drive, the more petrol you buy, so the more tax on fuel that you are purchasing as well.
And the more you contribute,
Yeah, but of course they're looking at taking the fuel tax away and baking it into the road user charges, as far as I understand it.
Right. And I guess then that equals up EVs and petrol cars as well, does it?
Yeah, then all vehicles will pay that. And then who knows? Will that be after bicycles next?
Probably. Boy, there'll be zero bicycles on the road. There are about 0.5 of a bicycle on the road every time I look at the moment. There's hardly any. There'll be none. All right, let's stay with cars. We've talked before about the data that cars can collect. And you used the term just before, baked in. This technology seems to be baked into every recent car design. Am I right?
Well, yeah. So I want to talk about a particular attack called the relay attack. And this is how modern cars can be stolen. So modern cars, and they have for a very long time, use a thing called a CAN bus. Now, you might think CAN bus, that sounds like a public transport system with a positive attitude, but no.
CAN bus.
It's a controller area network, and it's basically a network used for communication with sensors. It was originally developed to reduce the complexity and the cost of electrical wiring in cars, because with sensors around the cars, like particularly with fuel injection, every sensor, you would need to run wires from the sensor all the way back to the engine management system.
Right.
And you can reduce the amount of wiring that you have on a CAN bus system. So it was developed by Bosch, started in 83, became mandatory in the USA by 96, and the EU since 2004 for petrol, 2001 for petrol vehicles, 2004 for diesel. So they've got four wires, power, ground, CAN bus high, and CAN bus low. And it's not just cars, but it can be used in agricultural equipment, electronic equipment for aviation, navigation, elevators, escalators, building automation, even model roads, lighting control systems, and a whole bunch of different stuff. So the modern car these days can have as many as 70 different electronic control units. Typically, they are just called computers. And they could do a whole lot of different things in the car, potentially autonomous driving. You've got advanced driver assistance systems, the transmission, airbags, anti-lock brakes, ABS, cruise control, power steering, audio systems, power windows, battery recharging systems, if it happens to be electric or a hybrid. And there's a whole bunch of different subsystems that are in modern vehicles. So in your vehicle, you've basically got a network of all these different things. Now, this relay attack happens on more modern cars because even though the CAN bus system has been around for quite a long time, it has spread more and more and more into vehicles. So now it's potentially you can have your vehicle stolen via the headlight. And like, well, that seems like a really odd place to do it, because headlights now, believe it or not, are actually part of the CAN bus network. And how a thief can steal a vehicle is that they separate the panels on the car. You know, you've got the seams where the panels line up and things like that. So you get in there with a screwdriver, pry bar or whatever, and you gain access to the wiring harness that's plugged into the back of the headlight. Now, thieves typically have a homemade device, which often looks like a Bluetooth speaker, and they attach it to the headlight wires. The device sends fake error code signals to the vehicle's network, and it wakes the car up, wakes up the computer. And then they send a valid key signal, so it fakes the key fob buttons that you typically
And it pops open the the locks.
Yep, and it pops open the doors, and there you go. You've just got into the vehicle without setting off an alarm.
Ah, gosh. Smart.
So after there was a guy that, what's his name? It was It was Ian Tabor, a guy in the UK. He on X couple of years ago said there was, you know, no point in having a nice car these days because thieves just vandalize it. He went out to the street, his Toyota RAV4 had been vandalized, thinking thieves were just mucking about, only to find out the following day, because it took them two goes at this, to actually pinch the vehicle. And right. He was able to locate the fact that the car was on the move using the Toyota app, because Toyota knows where your car is the whole time, and was freaked out because not only was it gone, but he just filled the tank up the night before.
Oh, dear. So it had a good range of driving on it for the thieves.
Yes. And after a bit of homework, discovered that you can buy tools for about $5,400 that you can break into a lot of different vehicles with. Now, that might seem like a lot of money, but if you're in the market of pinching vehicles, that's actually an investment.
Yeah.
And this kind of attack actually includes BMWs, Cadillacs, Chrysler, Fiat, Ford, GMC, Honda, Jeep, Jaguar, Lexus, Maserati, Nissan, Toyota, and VW. And you might think, well, why is the headlight part of the CAN bus network? because it should just have power on ground, right? A headlight's a headlight. Well, some headlights can get quite fancy. So if you've got a vehicle whereby you're putting a load on the back of the vehicle and the suspension compresses with the weight, and so if you're driving at night, the headlights, instead of pointing down, potentially point into the face of the oncoming
vehicle. Yeah, like a high beam.
Vehicle.
Yeah.
Like a high beam, so the headlights automatically adjust, and they do all this kind of fancy stuff. So that's why that has spread, and it is fixable with a software update over the year. So again, cars are less of a car and more of a computer on wheels. And now this enters another problem, because a Chinese manufacturer, you've probably heard the name Xiaomi, they make a whole lot of different things. With headlights that they make, they have an encryption key on it. So if you've got a busted headlight and you want to go buy another one, you can't just pop down to Repco, Supercheap, or whoever and buy a simple off-the-shelf replacement. You have to buy that branded one.
Right. Top dollar.
Top dollar. So the manufacturer now controls the price of the parts, and they can potentially decide when to obsolete a vehicle by choosing to discontinue parts for that vehicle. And that kind of has an effect on third parties wanting to produce things for vehicles, unless they become
the aftermarket
thing. And I've seen this with laptops, with batteries, particularly like Lenovo laptops, and there'll be others as well. I've seen a guy, he actually hacked the firmware of his laptop to accept an aftermarket battery that he bought because it was cheaper than the official battery, but the laptop wouldn't work with it. It refused. Mm. And I think similar things happen with printer cartridges as well. The printer goes, sorry, this is not an official approved bit of toner cartridge. I'm not using it.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, I suppose that's, you know, if you're the inventor, manufacturer, whatever, I guess that's your right. But people have to know what they're getting into as well.
But at the same time, consumers need to have choice.
Yeah. There need to be products that aren't set up that way or something.
This springs off operating systems and phones and other things like that. You get, the term is called vendor lock-in. So once you've purchased something, you are now compelled to keep purchasing products, fixes, et cetera, from the vendor, so you can't go somewhere else. And to expand further upon the concept that a car is more of a computer than it is a car, I'm going to read out a few items and the millions of lines of code that's in them. Now, to put this into context, a million lines of code, if it was printed out, might be about 18,000 pages of text, which is 14 times the length of War and Peace.
Okay.
So the average iPhone app has less than 50,000 lines of code. The control software to run a US military drone, 3.5 million lines of code. A Boeing 787, 6.5 million lines of code behind its avionics and the online support systems. Other reports suggest it's 14 million. The Google Chrome browser, 6.7 million lines of code.
Gosh.
The Large Hadron Collider, 50 million lines of code.
I can imagine why that could be.
Facebook, not including the back-end code, 62 million lines of code.
Ooh.
Now, taking into account the advent of sophisticated cloud-connected infotainment systems that you find in vehicles, the car software in a modern vehicle, apparently, it's about 100 million lines of code.
I wasn't expecting that to beat everything else.
Well, the only thing that really beats that is Google services, which is 2 billion lines of code.
Boy, no wonder they've got so many coders banging away in the background. Wow, that's something to think about.
It's more code in a vehicle than there is in a 787 aircraft.
Yeah. Yeah, how come that is?
Well, the infotainment system does take up quite a lot of that, but the, you know, 70-plus different individual computer systems in a modern vehicle all doing their bit, all coordinating, doing their thing, that all adds up.
Gee, okay. Fascinating. Anything more to say about that, or are we done for this Tech Tuesday, Stephen?
I think that was a pretty decent brain dump.
Yeah, we'll go away and think about that. Next time you get in your modern car, think about all those lines of code.
And think about, well, make sure that no one's been prying the panels apart, trying to do a CAN bus injection relay attack and trying to pinch your vehicle.
Looks like another CAN bus attack.
Yeah.
Yeah, you say to your wife. All right, there goes another Tech Tuesday. Really interesting. Thank you, Stephen. See you in a week.
Thank you. We'll see you then.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.